Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're just learning about this show now, please know that we are on the air for you by bringing special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain. Now, our goal for each show is to bring answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network and browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics. I am confident that there is something you will find that will bring greater joy to your life and the ones you love. Now, I also have a favor to ask. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, some of the biggest questions many of us ponder in life involves science and spirituality. Well, today we get to hear from someone who has extensively studied both. Our guest, Dr. Mona Sobhany, is a cognitive neuroscientist, author, and entrepreneur. A former research scientist at the University of Southern California, she holds a doctorate in neuroscience from there and completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Vanderbilt University with the MacArthur Foundation Law and Neuroscience Project. She is the author of Proof of Spiritual Phenomena, a neuroscientist's discovery of the ineffable mysteries of the universe. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, Vox, and other media outlets. Mona, welcome to Answers Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And as I was going through your book, I was just enjoying it so much because I think it's a topic that many of us think about. I know it's something that I've had questions for all of my life. And being that of sort of a researcher, I find myself trying to delve into certain things, but I do it on the fly. So I do it, you know, somebody brings something up to me and I go right into it. What I love about your book is that you've gone so in depth into things that that again, I think many of us are having these same questions, but maybe just haven't either come up with the right time to ask them or got so busy that we just figured, well, I'm just going to keep moving on. But one of the things in your book that you say that you were the least likely person to tell the story of spiritual transformation.
Yeah.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a very just hard-nosed scientist. I didn't grow up in a very spiritual or religious family. I mean, my mom's spiritual, but I didn't grow up with it, believing in it. I think that, and once I went into science, any kind of, I guess, not curiosity about the universe, because that's obviously there, especially mm-hmm. for scientists. But I think believing that there's any kind of meaning behind anything, or that, basically any meaning, like to life or any kind of plan or direction, I never believed that, or I wanted to, or I was always looking for, like, is there any evidence that that's the case? But I never found it. And then when you're going through scientific training, you know, our mainstream Western worldview, our mainstream scientific paradigm is based on certain philosophies. And one of them is that, you know, the universe and reality is composed only of matter, like, and everything is physical and can be measured. Even if we can't measure it right now, eventually we'll be able to measure it. And the other belief is that there is no meaning in the external universe, that the universe is dead, random, meaningless, and that anything that you want to create, like if there's anything you want to, a story you want to create in your head, meaning you want to get from life or the events in your life, that's all you. It all comes internally from your brain, from your experiences, but there's no external meaning. And so I bought into all that.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, so if you're being so indoctrinated into all of this thinking, and again, any of us that go to college know that, I mean, you are, a lot of this is you're being indoctrinated into that thought process. What events triggered your interest in spirituality?
Yeah, so for me, it was not direct personal experience initially, but it was that I'm Persian, and my in our culture we have a kind of a tradition of divination, which is kind of intuiting things about other people or looking into their past, present, or future in some sort of energetic or whatever you want to call it, basically some way we can't measure. And so my grandmother used to do this with using coffee grounds. It's not American coffee. It's like this thicker coffee that you leave the grounds in the cup and it dries, it creates pictures. And then if you have a reader, like my grandmother, she can peer into the grounds and see things about you. And she was very good, apparently. I never got to have a reading from her, but my mother also learned the skill from her mother, and this was always going on in our family at our parties in the background of my whole life, basically. And I never paid attention to it. I didn't even know what was going on until I was in graduate school and I started going home on the weekends, and my mom started just absentmindedly, we'd have coffee together and she would read for me. And I remember thinking, this, I'm okay. Like, I'm not gonna, it's my mom. I'm not gonna, it's a bonding moment. I'm not gonna tell her to not do it, but I didn't take it seriously until I started noticing that the things that she said about the future would come true. And with like really, really, really specific details, she would say of the situations. And those little details are what would stick out. Like I would forget the reading because they weren't important to me. But then something would happen. I'd be like, why does this sound familiar? Why is this ringing a bell? And then I would remember, I'd be like, oh my goodness, she said, and she like highlighted this part of this experience. And so then I started taking notes. So for over 10 years, I just started, every time she read for me, I would write down what she said and kind of try to, not like, it's not like a scientific experiment, but just kind of anecdotally, what comes true, what doesn't. And I just found that she was more right than she was wrong. And so if she, warned me about losing money or something like that, I would pay attention. And I couldn't explain it with my science. They don't talk about anything like that in undergrad and graduate school. I mean, it's not, there's no space for it in the paradigm. So, I mean, there's nowhere I could go to ask questions or to come up with theories about it. So I just ignored it and lived in this cognitive dissonance, kind of this like, there's this half of my life that kind of guides me and provides some meaning. And then there's science, which is really my religion, actually, was kind of my worldview and my religion. And I just kept them separate from each other. Did you have a, I'm sorry, did you have a
Well,
question?
no. I was listening. I'm loving it. And as you were saying that, and I was thinking about, the fact that you're, as you say, you're going home for the weekend or whatever. And I was envisioning when you get back to work and you're back with all of your, the other scientists that you're working with. I was envisioning, how does that conversation go on, or did you just completely avoid even sharing any of that with them?
The funny thing is, I don't remember telling anyone. Like now that I'm thinking back, I'm thinking, oh, there's no way I told anybody. There's no way I talked about this with my colleagues. But I was, catching up with old friends recently, telling them about the book and the journey. And they're like, oh yeah, I remember you used to get readings from your mom, like the coffee. And I was like, I told you that. Like, I don't remember telling anyone that. Like, I can't believe that I did that. But apparently I did. So I starting, so then I started thinking, I was like, maybe I was more open back then or something. But by the time I graduated, they really beat it out of you. They really beat it out of you. And you, because you can't have, I don't know, I guess in your head, it's like, I have a PhD, I have a responsibility, I'm a scientist. I, they've told us that the brain creates meaning. And so any connections that I see is all in my head, so to speak. And you really buy into that. And a lot of people still, when they only hear this part of the story, they immediately start asking me as though I'm, naive, as if I didn't think of all of the possible ways that I could be creating meaning from the readings, as if I'm not trained as a scientist. But anyway, and it when you only hear this part of the story, you are kind of like, because psychic readings or intuitive readings, they're not the most scientifically rigorous experiences. to be fair, but that's why you need actual scientific studies. And that's what I ended up looking for later in the journey. But it started with the readings. And what had happened was my mom had, there were two big emotional events in my life that she foresaw coming. And I think that all of the other readings were, you know, small life things, but one of these was a life and death thing. So she saw, this was like a, just a very significant 5 weeks before this event happened, she got really weird and very serious about the reading. Like she kind of was like, oh, I have to warn you. I think you're going to get some bad news. And she'd never said anything like that before. And this was at a point where I knew she was good, you know, good, and probably something was going to happen. But so I kind of lived in terror for 5 weeks. And then 5 weeks later, I found out that one of our professors from my graduate program was killed by one of the students. And it was someone who had helped me on one of my dissertation experiments. And so that obviously was terrible in and of itself and upsetting for me personally. But then on top of that, the fact that she had seen it 5 to 6 weeks in advance really kind of caused me to have a little bit of a crisis of what does this mean about the universe? How could there be information out there about somebody's death? And does that mean that there's a, such a thing as fate and destiny? Or was it a glitch? Those kind of science fiction things you think of in those movies you watch of like, did something change or could something have been changed or whatnot? And so I started thinking about those things and it really kind of upset me and threw me into a little bit of an existential crisis. But I was very busy at the time. I didn't have time to sit and read or research or think about it. So I went on. But then another event happened two years later, and she saw this relationship coming into my life and that it would be positive. And it was great, whatever, but it ended. And so I was already not in a great place, I think because of multiple factors in my life. But with that one, it was like the final straw. And I went into a serious existential crisis and a complete and utter despair, you know, lost all hope and optimism. I was just depressed, basically. And for the first time ever to that degree in my life. And so for a while, I didn't do anything because I was just in like a hermit in bed. But then after a while, I started thinking about the readings and getting curious and thinking, well, I'm in existential despair, which means I need to understand existence better. And right. So where can I start? And because I already know science well, and I was like, and that's not helping me at the moment. Because when you're in crisis, the thought that life is meaningless is not helpful. Yeah, so really. Nobody goes to the science section of a bookstore when they're in crisis. So I started thinking about the readings, because they seem to have more answers, honestly, like at that point. And then I started this kind of investigation of like, I went to meet other people who are very intuitive and I took my friends with me. I made us all get readings and we would swap readings to see if they were generic and vague for everyone or if they were specific. Yeah. And they ended up being very specific to each of us. So we thought, but this was just casual and fun at this point. And we thought, okay, interesting. There's something there. But then the turning, and in the readings, they would talk about karma and reincarnation and, soul groups and soul lessons. And I didn't understand any of that. I genuinely had no background in spirituality at all. Like I had heard the word reincarnation, but I did not really know what it meant. So they would talk about these things and it was just went over my head. And a few months later, after we had my friends and I were doing these readings for fun. We're like, there seems to be something here, but who knows? I definitely did not think anyone had ever studied this in a lab, because that's kind of the idea or like the impression you get from mainstream media and scientists. And then I was listening to, this is totally random. I wasn't listening to anything spiritual at the time. I was still just my old self. And was reading Chelsea Handler's book, Life Will Be the Death of Me. And she had like a 6-episode limited series podcast on it. And most of it was about psychology and therapy and personality tests and her dogs and whatever. Yeah. But then one episode had a psychic medium on, Laura Lynn Jackson. And I was surprised because I remember at that point, Chelsea Handler was a skeptic. And I was like, oh, she has a psychic medium on. How weird. It was also just weird because I was at that point going to them. So I was like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. And then Laura Lynn Jackson comes on and starts talking about karma and reincarnation and soul groups and soul lessons. And I was like, where have I heard this before? Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. The intuitives. So I started listening carefully. And she mentioned that she actually participated in studies, in brain studies, where scientists would measure her brain waves while she does readings. And then she was describing how it felt. And I was just eating it up. I was like, oh my God, this is so weird and so interesting. This is what I was curious about. Like, what is going on? Is there information or energy that we can't measure, but that we can perceive? And so it sparked this kind of interest. And then they mentioned on the podcast, there's this book called Many Lives, Many Masters, and it's a psychiatrist case study. And that's all they said about it on the mm-hmm. podcast. They're just like, it's a great book. Everyone should read it. And so I ordered it thinking, oh, psychiatry right up my alley. And then it arrives and it's about past life regression, which I didn't know what that was. So I started reading this book and I was like, what am I reading? I had no mm-hmm. idea what I was reading, but it was this Yale Columbia trained psychiatrist, atheist, didn't believe in anything paranormal, seemed like a very logical, rational guy. And he's just telling this case study of this person he couldn't heal with normal methods, like normal psychotherapy, nothing worked. And he decides to regress her hypnotically and like mm-hmm. go back to the time of your trauma. And she starts mm-hmm. recounting past lives. And he was like, what is going on? So he stumbles across it, but finds out it's very healing for her. And he then describes the spiritual framework as well, because he's like, in her regressed state, I guess she gave him spiritual information, allegedly from, you know, the other side or whatever they call it, and said like, Earth is like a school, you come to learn lessons of like, you know, charity, love, compassion, mm-hmm. getting along, mm-hmm. and you reincarnate and etc. So I was sitting there with this book like, what am I reading? And I'm like, why is this spiritual framework like everywhere? I'm like, do all intuitives go to like, or psychics go to some school? Do they all learn this? How come I've never heard of it? Why is the psychiatrist talking about it? Like, I was just very confused. And, but I was interested because I think when you hear it from enough sources, you know, like first the intuitives, which at that point in my life, I didn't take them seriously at all. So it went over right. my head. Then that, you know, Chelsea, like somebody you would respect and admire who you use as a filter, like what they filter, you filter. And then for me, the ultimate is somebody with a lot of prestigious degrees. That's what I respected. So at that point I just thought, wow, interesting. Maybe there's something here. Maybe not, but maybe. So I just started reading everything I could about past life regression, which led to stuff on reincarnation. And I read spiritual texts, I read philosophical texts, but then I started interviewing people, and through the people I interviewed, I got recommendations for actual scientific studies that had been done. And then I started going down that rabbit hole.
Well, and you mentioned the scientific studies and how you were analyzing many of these experiments. And one of them that you mentioned in the book is the Gansfield tests. Mm-hmm. And at one point it showed that the odds against chance was 12 billion to one, mm-hmm. Which kind of throws our current scientific, materialist paradigm into question. Yes. Explain what this test was and how it came to the conclusion that it did.
Yeah. So it turns out, so the common belief is that these things have been studied and have been debunked. And people a lot of times will talk about psychics. But the fact is that scientists, really well-trained scientists for over 100 years in hundreds of labs across the entire world in a bunch of different countries, have done thousands or hundreds of thousands of experiments on what we either call psychic phenomena or psi. They call it psi, which is a little confusing if you don't know what that is. But right. So I just say psychic phenomena so people know what I'm talking about. Right. So yeah, the Gansfield's just one type of experiment that they do, but they'll put people in electromagnetically shielded rooms because they're, you know, they don't think it's an electromagnetic signal. And everything that we measure and use in this physical world is on the electromagnetic spectrum. So mm-hmm. it's believed that it's another type of energy. So you put these, like, you'll put two people in separate rooms. And the idea is basically that you can send thoughts between people, that we are all interconnected and connected by something else. And so you'll put them in separate rooms. You'll have one person actively try to send thoughts to the other person at specific times during the experiment. And you give them a choice of randomly chosen by a computer. Let's say one of four pictures, like it'll be a dog, a lamp, a mountain scene, whatever. So it's randomly chosen. You give it to one person. They are supposed to send thoughts of that to the other person in the other room. And they don't know when it's happening, the other person, obviously. And then you can record their like if they are sweating, if they're affected by the image, and then you ask the person at the end, like, what do you think the person was sending you thoughts of? And they'll make mm-hmm. a guess, or they'll choose from the picture options. And so above chance levels, they would choose the correct picture. So that's what that means. That's what the experiment is. And so the idea is that, a picture that's chosen by two people who are physically separated in electromagnetically shielded rooms, but you could send thoughts to somebody else, and at a greater than chance level, they can guess, like if they can just guess the right one that you sent them.
Well, I want to share something. So about 10 years ago, I was in a meeting with a major TV network in regards to a TV show that we were pitching that they actually ended up buying. And there's about seven of us sitting in this circle, and people were talking, you know, and they're asking questions and things. And I looked at one of the owners of this company, and I looked at him and I answered a question, and he looked at me and it's like the blood ran out of his face. And he said, I didn't ask that out loud.
Yeah.
And I could have sworn that I heard him say that. And I got embarrassed, and I was like, yeah, but he kept looking at me like, this is a very strange guy. It was like, what were you doing? And I wasn't controlling it. I didn't know what I was doing. I just thought that he was asking me a question. And so I answered it. So, that was a very interesting thing. And I've had other situations like that, to where I really have felt like I'm getting a message or I'm getting a question coming from someone. So I think that touches right into what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's actually very common. And as I mentioned, there's been thousands of experiments on it. There's another scientist named Rupert Sheldrake, whose books I really recommend. He's done a great job writing about this. And he's an extremely well-credentialed, accomplished scientist who's, in addition to doing his normal science, he's looked into psychic phenomena. And he did that. He did studies with people, seeing if they could guess who's calling without knowing. Like, they would, again, choose people ahead of time from their life or whatever, and have them call them at a specific time. And people with above chance levels would guess the right person. And so, and they've done it with pets too. I know, so, especially in LA, everyone loves their pets. He found that animals can anticipate when their owners are going to come home. And he would have them come home at random times and observe the behavior of the pet. They found above chance levels again. So it seems from all the research that we are connected, we're all connected by something greater than the electromagnetic energy that we use and measure in all of our normal, technology and stuff. But there is something else that we can't measure yet, but that you can measure the effects of.
All right. We are speaking with Dr. Mona Sabani, and we are talking about her new book, Proof of Spiritual Phenomena. And we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd love for you to share with us what you found that were some of the most fascinating things that you learned doing your research for this book. So for everybody, stay with us. You're watching or listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. Mona Sabbani. And when we went to break, my question was, what were some of the most fascinating takeaways you learned from with your interviews that you conducted with mediums, psychics, behavioral health practitioners, and scientists?
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's see. I was most surprised by this. I'm going to start with this one because I did something this weekend. I'll tell you what it was. And it's related. So I was really surprised. So I interviewed, of course, the intuitives and psychics, but I also interviewed my scientist colleagues because I felt like I was crazy and like I was alone and that I was the only person who was interested in this or open to it. And I had this misconceived idea that scientists are not spiritual or not religious and do not believe in anything anomalous or unexplained. And so I was like, you know what? I started, you know, questioning all my thoughts and I thought, okay, that's an assumption I'm making, but let's find out if that's true. And luckily I have a lot of scientist friends. So it was during COVID, during the quarantine, the initial lockdown, the very first. And so everyone's home on Zoom and I just interviewed them and talked to them about this. You know, I was like, we've known each other for over a decade. Like do you guys believe in anything? Like, are you spiritual? You know, and they were all in agreement that there are so many things that science can't explain. There's so many mysteries. And as people who do science, we recognize the limits of science. Like science is just a method. The scientific method is just measuring, coming up with a hypothesis, testing it. Science is not something you believe in. It is a method that we use. And we know the limitations of that, which are many, you know, just because of the limits in technology and whatnot. So they were all in agreement. I mean, one of my friends was like, I came into neuroscience because I'm interested in philosophy. He's like, I actually love the paranormal. You know, I think I think there's something there. And all of them had personal experiences. They may not have been personal, but they all had stories of people from their lives who either, you know, could always knew when something was going to happen or had visions or had dreams that came true or had a haunting or whatever it was. Like they all had stories. And so it was really easy to have these conversations, which I was surprised by. And I was obviously very comforted by them. And this past weekend, I went to, we have a Society for Neuroscience, which is, if you're a neuroscientist, mm-hmm. you're part of it. It's a group. And we have a conference every year. And this year I organized a neuroscience and spirituality social with a collaborator. And I thought nobody was going to come. I got like the smallest possible room at the hotel, the conference hotel. And I was like, okay, well, we'll just hang out for 3 hours and talk to each other. No one's coming. It's okay. The room was overflowing. We had to keep asking for more chairs from the organizers. And we were worried we were at capacity in the room, but there were so many scientists interested in talking about reincarnation, meditation, psychedelics, psychic phenomena, the things that we all know are real and true, but for some reason we can't talk about, and we definitely can't investigate because there's no money for it, no funding. So it was really encouraging. I mean, I'm blown away. I'm still like, I have goosebumps from this weekend because I'm so surprised. But I have basically found that to be the case. I've found other professional groups that I've joined of scientists and philosophers who are like, this materialism doesn't explain a lot of human experience. There has to be something more. So I've been most surprised by that, because I for sure thought I'm the only person and I'm nuts and I'm throwing my career away. So
you mentioned something when you mentioned funding, because as you were saying that, the thought was going through my mind going, you know, why is it then that in the schools that are teaching and that are teaching science, that they're not at least opening the door to these things? You know, they don't have to actually teach it, but at least open the door. And so my thought was that, do you have students that are just afraid at that point to bring up anything that might get them a lower grade or get them embarrassed by a professor that's going to shoot them down? Or is it just that once you graduate and once you get out and do things, there's no funding for it, so you stay focused on the things that are going to provide an income?
Yeah, and it's both things. It's a social stigma, and it's a practical concern about who will fund your research. So it's definitely both things. There's and it's not specific to science. There's a cultural social stigma, but you can imagine it's much stronger in the scientific world. And the fact is that the research that I cited in the book that I reviewed, that I said there's a lot of, which there is, it's not easy to find and it's not well known. And when I, you know, even at the beginning of my journey, I assumed it didn't even exist. And that's what at this meeting that I was at this weekend, we asked who's familiar with this research. Two people. Like, nobody is familiar with it. So that's one problem. Is they're, first of all, afraid to admit it, afraid to look at it, because then they'll have to admit it's real. And then the other thing is there's no funding for this kind of work. Which if anyone's listening and would like to fund, I can direct you. But there's a lot of scientists who want to do this kind of work. There's just no money to do it. So that's why it's not done.
Okay. So what do you think what do you believe are the long-term implications of if we stay on this sort of scientific materialist paradigm and we continue to ignore or don't fund the spiritual dimensions of our universe? What do you think our long-term implications are going to be for that?
I mean, I think we're already seeing them, which is there. I mean, when you look at universities, you have the humanities and then you have science. And unfortunately, as much as I love science, obviously I'm a scientist, I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's been very useful to us. Science is not the entire picture of a human. And as I mentioned, when you are in crisis, nobody turns to science. I mean, very few people that I'm aware of go there for comfort. You go to art or religion or spirituality or things we would throw into the humanities. And it's almost like we are ignoring half of our humanity, literally, to focus on the science. And I think emotionally, it's very dangerous to our well-being. And I think that's what you're finding in our culture is, and I was one of those people who hated spirituality and religion. I was like, don't even bring that up in front of me. You know, that's garbage. So I'm guilty of that. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to rectify it now. But I think it's very unhealthy to do that, because I think there's a lot of studies that show that believing in something and having meaning, and if that's spirituality for you or whatever it is, it keeps you healthy. It improves your well-being. You're like, literally, chronic illnesses, there's less if you have meaning in your life, things like that. And so I think that this materialism has literally taken that out of our society. As life is meaningless, existence doesn't mean anything. It's up to you to figure it out. I mean, what an unhealthy, cruel worldview to be perpetuating. So that, I think that's the first thing. The second thing is that we will never understand reality. We are ignoring half of the evidence, half of the world. And even it's weird, because even if scientists never had these experiences themselves, we would be ignoring the majority of the Earth's experiences. But then scientists ourselves experience these things, and so we're ignoring half of ourselves. And that means we're missing at least half of the model of what reality really is. And that has a lot of implications for, mm-hmm. I mean, technological advancement as well as humanity's well-being.
Now, do you think that one of the reasons why maybe we are shifting a little bit better in this area of being more open and looking at things is that I think that during COVID, it seems like science sort of took a hit because, more than any other time, at least in my lifetime, mm-hmm. it kept saying, follow the science, follow the science, follow the science. And people kept saying that. And then people were finding out, well, that didn't necessarily take us where we thought it was going to go. Or you have somebody, one person saying, follow the science and coming to one conclusion, and somebody else saying, follow the science, and they're coming to a completely different conclusion. Yeah. Do you think that has had some effect on maybe where people are now looking for answers?
I think that's probably true. And I felt really bad for science during COVID because it's science is hard. And people want yes or no answers, but the nature of reality is a spectrum. And most things in science are a spectrum. Most things are grayscale. And scientists are always doing the best with what information they have. And if you have a new virus, you don't have a lot of information. So mm-hmm. I feel bad for it. I get it. I mean, it was frustrating to everybody because every day it would change. And that's just because we were all scrambling to figure out what is going on. But I do think it raised some important, because points to keep in mind in general, not just about science, but about everything, is that we have a lot of assumptions. Our brain does that. This wonderful thing, our brain doesn't like to work too much. So it makes shortcuts and biases mm-hmm. for everything. And so that's why we jump to conclusions. We make assumptions about other people. We make these biases from when we're young, and then we just keep them because it's hard to update. It takes energy. It takes effort. It's hard to update your neural representations, is what we say. And I think that, but we need to, otherwise mm-hmm. we won't change. And I think that was like a cool thing that came out of that whole science COVID thing is yes, trust the experts and yes, but like even myself, I mean, can you even imagine how torturous it was for me to be going through this spiritual situation and having science attacked by COVID? And I was so confused all the time about what I should believe in or who was right, or, do I trust science or do I not? And it's just confusing, but I have to remind myself too, that we're doing the best we can in the field with what we have. But it's always important to remember that we do that we make assumptions and that we tend to stick to ideas and worldviews and whatever, because we're lazy and because that's the easiest. But I think it's, important to always question your beliefs and always ask yourself, which is what I do now, what if I'm wrong? And I kind of view it like that. Like I think of my worldview as an Excel sheet that I had locked. And I was like, no, like my worldview is the scientific paradigm, no updates, thank you. And then since then I've opened it and I've been adding to it, and I never want to close it again. And so I try not to believe anything. I try to read and listen and absorb and question everything, because if I've learned anything, it's that we don't know anything. We don't know anything. So just keep asking questions.
One of the things that I love, when each time you start talking about the knowledge that you've gained in things, there's an excitement that comes out of you. That I think many people, if they're in a job and maybe they're kind of stuck, and you talked about the fact that you were sort of coming out of a depression, or in a depression state when you started delving into all of this. But I see an excitement, a child with a new toy or something like that. It's like, oh my God, I'm so excited because I'm getting more knowledge. Yeah. And the excitement of sharing it. Because it's one thing that when we get something and we're excited, but I get this excitement that you have because you're sharing it with more people. And I'm guessing you didn't have the same excitement sharing scientific data. you know.
I don't know.
But anyway, but no, I mean, I think it's great. And it's one of the things that with this show and what Jan and I try to put together are people that want to make a difference in other people's lives and are excited about doing it. And that's what I see in you. So I'm just so appreciative, you know, not only that you've delved in and you've done all of the work, because as, again, a researcher, I know how much work this can be, but you've gathered this information, you're putting it out there in a book, and you're excited to get it to us. So I really, really thank you for that.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. It does excite me. And it does excite me to share it because it really improved my life. I was very closed off to the idea of spirituality, but it turns out it's very valuable. And so I don't know, like, I feel like I'm telling people, like at that event over the weekend, a scientist was asking, like, well, how do you know if a sign is real, you know, or how do you know? And I'm like, dude, sometimes you're not going to know. Just take it. If it gives you comfort, like, who cares? We don't have to know everything.
Yes. I get it. Well, you know, obviously the journey has transformed your day-to-day life. How do you hope this book will influence the day-to-day lives of someone that's reading it?
I really want scientists in particular, but anyone else who's really subscribed to a materialist worldview to just engage in some, well, the shorthand way I like to say it now is to lean into the spiritual and the mystical. And whether you believe in it or not, it's really easy, especially in LA or wherever, to go get a reading or try Reiki or I can't recommend you take a psychedelic, but if that's your jam, you know, that meditate. There's a lot of breath work. There's a lot of practices that you can do that put you in what we call an altered state of consciousness. And those states are where you can access the spiritual and the mystical. And I really encourage people to do that because I'm saying this for fun, but there is magic in the universe. There is another dimension and we can tap into it. And all you need to do is be aware of it. It doesn't mean all of our problems are not problems and whatnot, but I think it's comforting. And I really encourage, especially scientists, because if we're trying to create a model of reality and we're trying to create technologies and biomedical advancements, wouldn't it be helpful to know what else is making up our reality? Like, we need to know. And so I really think it's imperative that scientists in particular do this, but I encourage everyone to get in touch with it because I think it's very healing. And I think it's also, it just opens your mind to more possibilities.
Well, I think you've already reached a scientist. We have a question that's coming in, and this one reads, do you have a specific approach to discussing your book with other scientists in your field? I'm a microbiologist, and my experience of, in quotes, up waking up to a new reality are similar to yours. Unfortunately, I feel compelled to share that I feel very inadequate in translating these concepts to others, especially others professionals like myself. I presume your book would help me with this. Is that correct? And this is from Edward in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's hard, I will admit. It can be hard, but that's why I organized that event over the weekend. Basically, there's strength in community, and there are communities of scientists who are like me, who are finding this research, opening our minds, and there's definitely strength in that. So I would definitely encourage you to find a community. You can email me, we can tell you my website. It's monasobaniphd.com. You can contact me. But I think it should be enough in our society to talk about your personal experience with someone and for them to try to understand it. But unfortunately, that's not where we are really as humanity. So I would say arm yourself with the studies. And that's what I do. I always would lead with that. And it kind of depends. You kind of have to read the room in a way. Sometimes I would lead with my personal story because I know, I don't know, like I just know somebody's not going to attack my experience. But if it's somebody very hard-nosed, then I start with the facts and I've memorized them, right? Like the statistics, these are the studies, these are the researchers, this is the institutions, these are the countries. Like you can go read it yourself and come back to me and tell me that you don't believe it. But if you, and this is important for the scientists, when you look at the statistics, if we throw away these papers on psi phenomena, psychic phenomena, we have to throw away a lot of our psychology and neuroscience research too, because the statistics are comparable. So it's kind of like, what is it that saying, don't throw rocks in the glass house? So you have to look at it. Yeah. So we have to, I mean, obviously for science, always data, just have the data at your fingertips.
Which is important. And for everybody, one of the things that I loved about the book, and again, being such a detective researcher that I am, that information is there. So I didn't have to go out and fact check it or anything. So that was very valuable to me. We've got another question coming in. We've got about 4 minutes left. This one reads, I'm fascinated by your book. A few years ago, I began studying meditation, which transformed my life greatly. Recently, my attention has been drawn to a series on Gaia.
It's a network.
Gaia TV. Yeah. Called Sacred Geometry. No, Geometry. Okay. Which features biogeometry and biosignatures, which have been scientifically proven in a number of studies at the University of Cairo. What are your thoughts on these subjects? And then it also adds, I'm really looking forward to your interview, hearing about your discoveries relating spirituality and neuroscience, and of course, getting a copy of your book. This is from Alice in New Mexico. And again, this is one of the ones that was sent in ahead of time, probably because they're working right now.
So really, really weird. This kind of thing happens a lot now. These are called these synchronicities. So I'm watching Sacred Geometry right now. I'm in the middle of it. It's so weird. My friend got a subscription to Gaia and she lets me use it. Sorry, I hope they're not watching. I don't want to be cut off. Or I hope she's not cut off. But I there's maybe one other show I've ever watched on there. And this is, the other day I just started watching Sacred Geometry. So unfortunately, I don't know a lot about Sacred Geometry. That's why I started watching the show. But I mean, there are other scientists who talk about this really eloquently, but I will say I've been reading, I know a lot of physicists now. I've been talking to physicists and other scientists about, you know, what is the mathematical, physical way that we can incorporate spirituality into more science. And I'm not that technical. So I leave it to them to describe and investigate these things. But I can just say there are scientists looking at this. And that, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, everything is math, or the angles, it's all geometry. Energy is, the way we model energy and physical laws is through mathematics. So yes, but unfortunately, that's all I have to say about it. But I think it's interesting too.
Okay, we are speaking with Dr. Mona Sabani. Okay? And earlier she mentioned the website. I'm going to say it again, but I'm also going to now tell everybody, if you're driving, don't try to write this down. Know that we will have it on the answers.network site as well. But it is Mona, MonaSobhaniPhD.com is the website. Again, the book, Proof of Spiritual Phenomena. I assume that you can get it most anywhere books are sold. If you have a local bookstore that you like, if they don't happen to have it, just call them and ask them. They can order it for you, and you can continue to support your local bookstore as well. Mona, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
And, you know, you, you know, you mentioned that there was a conference that you went to, and it was just this last weekend. You know, maybe at the next conference, let me know ahead of time. I would love to set it up, maybe meet in person, do an interview for the show right from the conference, so that if there's other people that we could bring in and go, so you didn't believe last week, but tell us what you're thinking now that you've just gone through this seminar. Yes. You know, I think there could be a lot of really fun and informative information we could add. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And again, for everybody out there, you know, if you have this desire for knowledge, she's already done the work for you. Okay. So the information's there. So again, thank you for doing this. Thank you for making a positive difference in the world for all of us.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Now for everybody out there, next week, we'd like to wish you a very wonderful Thanksgiving, and we hope that you will join us for one of our most popular interviews in 2022, which featured guest Ryan Foland. We discussed his new book, which is called Ditch the Act, Reveal the Surprising Power of the Real You. I think that if you check that one out, everybody can benefit from it. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube. If you do YouTube, you get to see us rather than just hear us. There's Spreaker and so many other great podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.